Thank you very much, Rhonda, and thanks for that welcome to everyone here. At the outset, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we're meeting today and to pay my respects to their elders past and present. And on behalf of the Victorian Government, I'd also like to welcome you all here to the second day. I want to extend a particular welcome to those that have come from far away, those that are visiting Australia from interstate or indeed from overseas. Welcome to Melbourne. And congratulations again to our community and Centre Care for organising another extraordinary gathering of people and organisations. It is a very impressive audience looking out from where I'm standing, and it's not easy to fill an auditorium of this size. It's not easy to do it early in the morning, and I think that says a lot about the way people regard this this regular event and the organisations that put it on. Now, Rhonda's asked me to speak on developing livable communities. Now, livability means different things to different people, of course, but when you ask people the basic question, why do you like where you live, and why do you live where you live? People's answers, of course, are different, but they tend to cluster around a number of three broad categories. First, people want to talk about the physical environment. They talk about things they like, parks and open space, maybe the beach or the bush or the rivers or the creeks, and the way their local area is laid out. And that goes to about being able to get out and about around their local neighbourhood and be able to do that in an easy and accessible way. The second category of answers is about access to local services and facilities, the things that are important to people, the facilities and services that they need. These include access to shops, access to jobs, of course, transport and employment opportunities, and school and community centres. The third category of answers to the question of why do you like where you live is very different. People talk about a sense of place and a strong community. People say they like or they want to live in a community that feels special, where there are strong networks in their local community, in their neighbourhood. This means that if we want to build more livable communities, then we need to be thinking about these three elements of people's livability. And that makes developing more livable communities a big and important task. For instance, one of the biggest challenges of our physical environment is Melbourne growing outwards and Melbourne's growing population. As many of you would know, Victoria's population is expected to increase by 1 million by 2021 now, a decade earlier than was originally forecast. This earlier increase in our population is the result of two factors. First is our high birth rate. Last year we had more than 70,000 babies born in Victoria, which is the highest number since the early 1970s. So high was this number of babies born that it brought itself to the attention of the Treasurer, and he described his budget this year in the state budget this year as being a budget for babies. The second factor of this growing population, of course, is Victoria's success in getting a growing share of interstate and international migration. And even if we had no more children and we stopped all the migration from interstate and overseas, the number of households in Melbourne would still keep growing. And that's because we're choosing to live in smaller family units, smaller homes and smaller family units, and there are more people living alone. Some of that new housing will be on the borders of Melbourne, and we need to improve the layout of those new communities because in the past it hasn't been as good as it could have been. But we can't have all the new development taking place on the borders of Melbourne. Some of our new communities will also have to be within the existing areas of Melbourne and in other cities around provincial Victoria. And this means creating new types of housing in existing areas. And of course, that's not easy. But it's going to be necessary, it'll be vital, if we want to keep Melbourne and other Victorian cities places where people want to live, places where people want to raise a family. The second aspect of livability was about access to services and local facilities. With a growing population and with an ageing population, there are huge pressures on our statewide services like hospitals, schools and transport. And over the last 10 years, we've put a large amount of resource into rebuilding our hospital system. We're also providing funding to rebuild or renovate every state school in Victoria over the next 10 years. And I'll come back to that and the opportunities that that creates a little bit later on. We've also committed an extra $10 billion to improve public transport. And that means, in particular, more buses for the outlying areas of Melbourne. But as we are investing in these services, we're also putting extra funding into making those services more accessible for people who are missing out. We know, for instance, that some groups miss out on the services that make a big difference to people's lives. And that's why in Victoria we've made kindergarten effectively free for low-income families. That's why we've funded some 57 new children's centres that bring different services together under the one roof. And incidentally, it's those centres that have now become the model for the Commonwealth, and we're hoping that idea is rolled out around Australia. The state government, we've provided extra resources so that many more families get access to maternal and child health services, and we're also endeavouring to get more women to give up smoking and drinking during pregnancy. We're also offering new major investments in disability services, particularly to help people stay independent and to enter the workforce if that's what they want to do. And we've called that package of extra support a Fairer Victoria. A Fairer Victoria has seen a major investment by the Victorian Government, more than $4 billion in new funding over the last 4 years, and we've seen $1 billion go into A Fairer Victoria in this year's budget. A Fairer Victoria is printed in a hard copy, and we've brought a few along to left out at the reception area, but more importantly, it's available on the web. If you go to the Department of Planning and Community website, you'll be able to find an electronic version of A Fairer Victoria. I suggest that you do that. We think that better access to services is one particular way of catering for families and for creating fairness. It's also the practical way of increasing social inclusion, because not having access to basic services is part of what creates social exclusion. And that brings me to the third aspect of livability, building a sense of place, and that there are strong local networks that can provide support for people when they need it. And really, this is a crucial and central element of livability. But it's also a challenge because it's an area that government hasn't been traditionally involved in. What I want to do is to describe four practical examples of how we're supporting that aspect of livability here in Victoria. My first example is about volunteering. Volunteering is important to us as a government. It's important to community organisations because volunteers more often provide the local support services that help people when they are actually in need. Of course, there are the high-profile examples. Happens, you see it in a dramatic way when there's a need for firefighting or during other emergencies. But volunteering also happens in many other important ways. There are those volunteers who help our refugee communities. There are those volunteers who drive kids to the country football and netball teams. There are those volunteers who help teach seniors how to use the internet. Whatever they do, we know that the number of people volunteering in Victoria is still very high, more than a million people, more than a million Victorians volunteer each year. But we also know that volunteering is changing, just as the community changes itself. And that's why, over the past 4 years, we've put new resources into the sector to help it respond to those changes. And one of the most successful ways of doing that has been through our grants program that helps small volunteer groups. We've now given out almost 1,000 grants to help those groups recruit new volunteers and to expand the range of work that those volunteers do for their community. We've recently revised the guidelines for these grants and that's been designed to make it easier for small groups to apply. So again, I urge any Victorian groups to visit the grants page on the department's website and use that as a portal to apply for these volunteer grants. You can also build a stronger sense of place and stronger local networks by involving people in the life of their local community. And at the simplest level, that can mean more people being involved in local sporting clubs or going to local community events. But we can also go further by offering people the opportunity to become involved in thinking about and planning the future of their local community. And over the last 3 years, through our community renewal and our community building initiatives, we've been working directly with small community groups that are going through very rapid change and communities where we know disadvantage is concentrated. We've offered those communities the resources and the support to bring people together to agree on the needs of their local community. And some communities are naturally very good at that. For example, community renewal programs, in community renewal programs, more than 6,000 hours of volunteer contribution has already been made. And in the community building projects, more than 4,000 people have attended community workshops. And in some communities, the attendance at those community workshops has represented a very large percentage of the people living in those small rural communities. However, some communities still need more help, and we've offered those areas extra resources to help them build the skills of their community members. And in areas where disadvantage is concentrated, the support we're offered has included help to coordinate a range of services provided in one area. And that means more linkages between different services and more responsiveness to the specific needs of that particular community. We're also helping to create new types of local employment and training opportunities. That's particularly important for people who usually struggle to access mainstream services. Working with groups like the Brotherhood of St Lawrence or AIMS, we've had particular success with a model called Community Enterprise. As you can see from the slide here, this represents a very successful community enterprise where some African refugees have set up a catering business operating out of a local school canteen. And the Sorghum Sisters provide a terrific service of catering to small functions but we just use these as one of the examples of a whole host of community enterprises that have seen people who have had difficulty getting employment successfully start up and maintain businesses or employment through that on the job experience and training. We've seen more than 70 community enterprises already exist around Victoria, offering everything from landscaping to catering services. They've already created more than 280 jobs and helped train more than 390 people. Because they use a small business model, they can become sustainable in the long term. And this year's budget, we've provided new and additional support through the creation of a community enterprise catalyst. And this will help community organisations develop and support new enterprises around the state. Now, my final example of building stronger local communities is not about funding. It's about thinking of new opportunities to coordinate the work of state government, local government and community organisations. Earlier, I referred to our plan to renovate and rebuild every state school in Victoria over the next 10 years. And this will create a unique set of opportunities for local community groups to piggyback in on that redevelopment program. For instance, it could mean libraries and community centres that are owned or used by schools as well as the local community. It could mean new shared community meeting rooms and training centres. It could mean greater access by the community to school, sporting and recreational facilities. Those new types of shared community facilities will help more people get access to the local services when they're needed, where they're needed. They'll also help, of course, bring different groups together under the one help, under the one roof, which helps bring greater social inclusion in their neighbourhood. So these are four examples of practical ways that we can help build stronger local communities. What links all of those examples is the involvement of the community sector, the big and the small groups that make up the not-for-profit sector here in Victoria. And one of the clearest messages that we've heard from the community sector in Victoria is that the government doesn't always work well with them. We think that in Victoria we could do more to cut through the red tape that often hampers the community sector. And we think there should be a dedicated area of government that can represent the interests of the community sector within government, to be their champion. And that's why in Victoria we've created the new Office for the Community Sector. It'll be headed by Lynn Wannan, and many of you would know that Lynn, for her long involvement in children's services and adult education here in Victoria, her experience and advocacy skills will go a long way to making sure that this new office meets the expectations of the community sector. I'm keen to see that the new office helps drive some of the solutions that are most pressing problems facing the community sector. We've consulted, and the sorts of things that we're looking for the new office to do are about simplifying the regulations about reporting requirements and about fundraising, particularly for small groups. Also looking at examining the ways of creating a leadership program that can help create the next generation of community sector leaders. We're looking to establish portable long service leave so people who are employed in the sector can hopefully stay and continue to work in the sector. And we'll help the sector to retain the staff they do employ rather than have them poached by business or by government. The new office will play a big part in creating more livable communities here in Victoria. That's because the community sector is one of Victoria's greatest resources. Our estimate is that there are around 120,000 community organisations in Victoria. Some of them are large and employ many staff in many different locations. Others are small, based entirely on volunteers. But whatever the size, they're all a great resource for Victoria. And that's why I want to thank everybody who are in this room, who form part of those groups that help Victorians and Victorian communities day in, day out. So thank you for the work that you've done, and we ask you to keep that up. I welcome once again our international and interstate guests, and in conclusion, I hope this conference is both enjoyable but importantly rewarding. Thank you very much.